And we are recording. It is the 11th of February. We're going to start mutual funds today. Oh, boy. So let's put that on the board so that we know who we are. Mutual funds. We're going to really get into these things, folks, because these are very important, because chances are you're going to be investing in these through your employer sponsor plan. And we'll also want to remind you about the investment club, which is on Thursday, so I'll remind you again on Thursday. And then we want to do a real quick, we didn't take a look at a few of the short-term investments examples. So we want to take a look at that. That'll just take a few moments. And then don't forget assignments. The assignments are due this Thursday. If you're not done, that's okay. Just leave me, let me know, and you'll keep working on them. But do work on those. Today's date, the 11th. Yeah, and see, the online students get an extra couple of days because they can turn it in online. But I'd rather you not send me an email, because I lose them, and then people, didn't you get my anyway, so who needs a good joke? Who has a good joke? Anybody have a good joke? No, we can't create a hostile environment.
You have a bad joke this morning?
I always have bad jokes. So I told you, if you don't bring good jokes, then you get to hear my bad. Did I tell you about the alligator that walked into the bar?
Yes.
How about the bear?
Yes.
Right? Did I tell you about the mushroom?
No.
See, I didn't tell you about the mushroom that walked into a bar. So this mushroom walks into a bar. Have you heard this one before?
No.
No? And he orders a beer. The bartender looks at him and says, wait a minute, you're a mushroom. We don't serve your kind. And the mushroom says, no, you got me all wrong. I'm a fungi. See, he's not a mushroom, he's a fungi. But he's see, I told you they get bad, worse. They get bad. So you're going to bring a good joke on Thursday?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I hope so. Okay, let's see how we did, or how we're doing. You guys are awesome. Look at this, 7.5%. Tesla came down a little bit. There was a speculative bubble, and there was calls. My hair must look bad. I'm sorry, but I was had the gorro. Gorro, right? Gorro? What is it? What is a hood in Spanish? Gorro.
Gel.
I'm sorry? Gorro, it's fine, yeah. And so there was a bit of a speculative bubble with Tesla, and it's come down a bit. But look at Galactic, Virgin Space, and then... Yeah. So you guys are awesome. Everybody's doing really well. Beyond Meat even is doing well, which is very speculative. The one that's kind of boring is Wells Fargo. Now, somebody wanted a REIT. Who was that? Is that Nate?
Yeah.
What do you want to sell? Huh? Anybody want to sell anything?
I say let's sell the REIT. I'm looking at the yields, 18%.
Wow, 18%.
I think it's a 4 years old.
We need to take a look at this, because is something, I mean, it sounds too good to be true.
Yeah, you should check the cash.
Yeah. 18%. Let's come back to that later on. I don't know. If something sounds too good to be true, 18%. Okay, so, and then the investment club, they are doing pretty good too, because they chose Tesla also. But who do they choose? Amazon and Apple. And then they wanted, well, this is Professor Martinez. She teaches accounting. She wanted Grupo Aeroportuario del Pacifico. This is the airports for Western Puerto Vallarta, Guadalajara, Western Mexico. So pretty cool, pretty good choice. Now, we had discussed the short-term investments, and I forgot to show you an example of here. So here is a, where is it? Yeah, right here. Money Market Fund Annual Report. Here's another one. Money Market Fund is T. Rowe Price. And what we do is we go to portfolio when we take a look. You're going to be doing this part of your assignment for Chapter 4, though. And we see that here are some examples. Here is something that they, as of the end of December, as of the end of December 2019, they were getting from the Royal Bank of Canada 1.57%. But look when it matured.
Oh, wow.
2 days later, right? In his short-term investments. U.S. Treasury notes, April. RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, same thing, second of January. Treasury notes, and so these are already mature. These are already matured. These are maturing at the end of October. So that's the case of short-term investments. They mature very quickly. And then let's take a look at this guy. It's pages 5 and 6. Right? You have to help me because my eyes, 5 and 6. So let's go down to pages 5 and 6. There's another mutual fund, pages. And so what you see, let's make it bigger. What you see is, this is from, I think, September, the end of September. Yeah, end of September. So these have already, they've already all mature. Fannie Mae, that's not a candy company, folks. That's a very big mortgage company, which we don't actually do business with them. But these things have already matured. But look, they were yielding almost 2% or 2%. The principal was $150,000. But at the day of valuation, September 30th, they were actually worth $149,978. So this mutual fund, in essence, bought them at a discount. And as it got closer and closer to the date of maturity, you see it getting closer and closer to the principal amount. And that's how the corporate paper, treasury bills work. We don't get an interest. We get an interest rate. We're told we're getting 1%, 2%, whatever. But we don't get that in cash. What we get is we buy the security at a discount. And then as it gets closer and closer to the maturity, it's worth more and more. Until finally the day of maturity, Fannie Mae pays whoever has the paper at that time. And it's all electronic. They pay them $150,000. Well, actually, you have to multiply by three zeros, you see. It's not $150,000, it's $150 million. So are you and I going to be buying corporate paper? Not too likely. Maybe if not, come see me. Okay, because I'll do whatever I can to help you. Okay, so now, does everybody have a Chapter 4 handout? Anybody not have a Chapter 4 handout? No? Okay, good. Let's make sure we got an extra couple. Because we're ready for mutual funds, investments for the masses. And I don't know if anybody actually has the... Oh, we got some extras here. Anybody actually has the book, but this is one of their more boring chapters. Yes, I'm sorry. So we don't want to... I mean, they're... Hey, I wish I could... I guess I could write my own book and sell for $300. And turn out to be really boring.
Why don't you
find? No, thank you. Writing a book is kind of like getting married. It's a long-term commitment.
But
there's
no
sex, so marriage, that's like a business, Starting a business is kind of like getting married. But again, there's no whoopee. Okay, so let's get started. What's in a mutual fund? Well, this is a bit of review. And again, this is something that you should be able to commit to memory and speak with authority to your friends and family and coworkers. A mutual fund is an investment company. There are other types of investment companies, by the way, but mutual funds are by far the biggest type, that invests its shareholders' money in a diversified portfolio security. Investment company is the legal term. Mutual fund is the popular term. We get two wonderful things. Are you going to memorize these? Are you going to nod your head? Yes. Make me feel good. Professional money management and instant diversification. And each fund has a specific objective that's outlined in the prospectus, which we'll take a look at one or two of them. And there are over 12,000 funds. Wait a minute. Are there 12,000 different breakfast cereals in the grocery store? No, it may seem that way, but no. Are there 12,000 different types of cars you can buy? You guys are still awake yet? You awake yet? You can say yes or no. In this culture, you can nod your head yes, or you can nod your head no. No, but there are over 12,000 funds. And why is that? Well, we'll see the explosion of funds that has happened over the last 30-some-odd years, 40 years, and the reasons why that happened. But as we said, and we'll say over and over again, the probability of you actually investing in mutual funds is very high because of the employer-sponsored plans such as 401ks, 403bs, or IRAs. And here, remember this graph?
Yes, sir.
Aren't you proud of me?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you. Because this is how it works, right? Millions of us little people give our money to the people with the top hats. These are the mutual fund managers who are paid very, very well. Some of them do a good job, some of them not so good. They create a pool of money, and then they go out and buy the stocks. It's a stock mutual fund. They go out and buy the bonds. It's a bond mutual fund. Or they buy the short-term cash instruments, money market mutual fund. And they don't buy 10 or 20. They buy 200 or 500. Dang. So you have a lot. Yes. Yes. What can I say?
The reason why these people can do it is because they have money to buy them.
Right. They have billions of dollars because there's millions of people giving billions of dollars to these people, and they're creating pools of money. That's hence the name mutual fund. And I understand that, and it makes sense, but I like investment company because you want cars, you go to a car company. You want shoes, you go to a shoe company. You want insurance, you go to an insurance company. Don't go to an insurance company for your investments. I don't know. But you want investments, you go to an investment company. Is that cool?
Yep.
Yes, nod your head yes. Or go no. Okay, yeah. Okay, so let's continue. Let's see the growth of the mutual fund industry. Now, before 1940, there were mutual funds, but they were in this gray area. They're not well regulated, and the IRS and the state regulators were kind of shaking their heads, nodding, you know, scratching their heads, saying, what do we do with these things? Well, in 1940, the demagogues and the republirats, the politics, poly means many and ticks are blood-sucking insects, they created the Investment Company Act of 1940, which set in stone the industry. And so then the regulators go, okay, now we're cool. But there were only 70 mutual funds. 30 years later, 350. And then 600, 2,000. And in the 1990s, the market went up in two directions, up and way up. Went in two directions, up and way up. And we saw 9,000. And since then, last 18 years, we're down a little over 12,000. Now, this includes open-end, closed-end, and ETFs, which we'll define in just a moment. But in 1980, there were only 5 million Americans who owned mutual funds, holding about 3% of their financial assets. Whereas at the end of 2018, according to the Investment Company Institute, which is the trade organization, nonprofit trade organization, they put out a fact book. Comes out in May, so the 2021 will come out in a few months. So this just goes to the end of 2018. But as of December 2018, over 100 million Americans in 57 million households own mutual funds. Why? 401ks, IRAs, 403bs. That's almost half, almost 45%, you know, not quite half. Mutual fund assets totaled $21.4 trillion. That's with a T. You and I cannot even begin to imagine how much money that is. It is a little bit more than the gross domestic product of the United States. All the goods and services that we produce and consume, and it's sitting in people's mutual funds. They are now the nation's largest financial intermediary, followed by commercial banks, and then life insurance companies, the invisible bankers. So let's see what's happened with the assets. You have one? Oh, okay. Here's see what's happened with the assets. Can you pass this over to her? In 2007, before the 2008, we saw $13 trillion. And then look what happened. Ooh-wee, 2008 was a tough year. And then it's coming back until finally at the end of 2018, it's $21.4 trillion. And we should see a bit of a bump because the stock market did 30% last year. So we should see in the, you know, $2 or $3 trillion added to that. We'll see in a few months. Okay, so what are the advantages? What did we say? What are the two major advantages of stocks? Everyone should say? Diversification and professional money management. Wait till I ask you. What are the two major advances of mutual funds?
Diversification.
People in the cheap seats? Come on. Everybody. What are the two? You might think I'm crazy. You may be right. But when you speak, when you answer me, you actually learn faster and better. It's already been statistically and proven. What are the two major advantages of mutual funds?
Diversification.
That's better. Okay. The third one is low initial outlay of capital. With $25 or $50 a month, do you have one of these yet? $25 or $50 a month, you can get started. So when people say, you know, I really want to wait till I have a lot more money to invest, I really don't have any money right now. They say, can you afford $50? They go, well, what's your cell phone payment? Well, it's supposed to be $50, but it usually winds up being $80. Download a lot of ringtones. So that's what makes mutual funds so easy to invest for people, because you don't need a whole lot of money to start. And I wish I would have coined this. This is from The Wealthy Barber, which is a wonderful book that was written a long time ago, so the numbers are all wrong. But he calls it the PETA factor. You know what PETA stands for?
No, sir.
Pain in the, pain in the arse factor. And so it's absolutely true. The hardest part about mutual funds is choosing the first fund and your second fund, choosing a family. But once you've done that, there's nothing more for you to do, because they're doing all the work. They're knocking on the doors of the car manufacturers and the tech companies and the healthcare companies and the media companies, and they're deciding who to invest in. So once you've chosen your mutual fund, and that ain't easy. We're going to see. That's not easy to do. But once you've done that, everything else is gravy. What are the drawbacks? What are the disadvantages? Well, these are not nonprofit organizations. They want to be paid for their work. And should they be paid for their work?
Yes.
You think so? Well, you know, when people tell me they want to get stuff for free, I say, you know, prisons and cemeteries. And they go, what? Prisons and cemeteries. Can anybody tell me what they have in common? Prisons are filled with people who got very free or very cheap legal advice. And cemeteries are filled with people who got very free or very cheap medical advice. You didn't think that was funny? I thought it was funny. Anyway, so there are fees involved. And you, dear students, are going to learn about the fees. Why? Because first of all, it's important. And secondly, most people they know they're being charged. They don't really understand it. So when you're in that 401k meeting and that muckety-muck woman or man with the three-piece suit and the gold watch and the Porsche or whatever they drive, and they tell you how wonderful the mutual funds are in your 401k plan, and you're looking and you go, wait a minute, how come they're charging 1.5% or 1%? Why can't we get something with half a percent or less? They're going to go, because that's because they represent an insurance company that turns around and charges higher fees. So you are going to look like a genius. Your friends and family, turn them off. Your friends and family and coworkers are going to be so amazed at you, and they're going to say, where did you learn this stuff? And what are you going to tell them? Everybody, what are you going to tell them? People in the cheap seats too? Business 123 Introduction to Investment, Southwest Income. You're welcome. Okay, now, so the fees. We're going to discuss the fees in general. And what? Many mutual funds do not match the market's performance. Aren't they supposed to know what they're doing? Well, there's a few things here we have to take a look at. Now, let's really quickly, because this is not that important, but it's important for you to know, just in case somebody says, well, what is this thing? It says it's a closed-end fund. There are three major types of funds. Open-end and closed-end traditionally were the two major types. You know what? This guy goes in the trash. Would you catch that for me, please, and put it in the trash? Okay. Open-end, when people say they put money in a mutual fund, they generally mean an open-end fund. This is the type of investment company in which investors buy shares from, sell them back to the mutual fund. There's no limit on the number of shares. So you give your $100, and they create a few new shares depending on what the price of the value of the mutual fund is. You want your $100 back? They redeem, they destroy the shares. They are issued and redeemed at the investment company at the request of investors. Investors can buy shares from, purchase, sell shares back to, redeem the investment company at any time. And by far, these are the largest. As of December 2018, there were 9,600 of these things having $17 trillion. Remember, it's $21 trillion. They have about 18 of that. Closed-end funds, on the other hand, are much smaller. There are not that many of them. In fact, they are shrinking. And closed-end funds operate with a fixed number of shares. So whereas the open-end fund is unlimited number of shares, the closed-end fund has a set number of shares that does not change. Once the fund is sold to the initial investors, the mutual fund company is not involved in that anymore. All they're doing is buying and selling the individual investments. It's your broker you have to go to. They're bought and sold on the exchanges, on the markets. So you're going to incur brokerage commissions. Closed-end investment companies are not as popular. Their numbers are shrinking. There were only 500, 9,600 open-end, 500 of these at the end of 2018, holding $250 billion. As opposed to almost $18 trillion. So you see, these are becoming less and less popular. That doesn't mean they're not good investments. Some of them are. Some of them, I haven't seen any that excite me that much. But that doesn't mean they're bad investments. But they're out there. The net asset value is the amount that the mutual fund is worth. At the end of business every day in New York, the mutual funds, both open-end and closed-end fund, are required to go value their securities and calculate what the net asset value is. And the calculation, the book wants you to do it. You don't have to. I'm not going to ask you. But it's pretty straightforward. You add up the value of the securities. You subtract any liabilities, which is normally close to zero, paying the rent. You have to pay off some investors who want their money back, whatever. And then you divide by the number of shares. So here's the formula. Value of the fund's portfolio minus the liabilities divided by the number of shares. So let's say they have 1 million shares and they add it up at the end of the business day. All their securities are worth $10 million, $50,000. I've made it round numbers. And they owe somebody $50,000. They have to pay the investor $50,000. So you take $10 million, $50,000 minus $50,000, that's $10 million, divided by the 1 million shares. And look in the paper. No one uses the paper anymore. Go online. And you'll see that the mutual fund's net asset value is $10. Now, the fund might have a load, a sales charge. So the offering price will be equal to the net asset value plus any commission, plus any sales charge. And we'll take a look at commissions today. But you, most people just key on the net asset value. Am I going too fast?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Any questions? I'm sorry, I go too fast because this stuff is the boring stuff. We're going to look at some interesting stuff today because once we get the fees, then you guys are going to go glaze over. What, Andres?
Is this like the growth rate?
Hmm?
It seems to be very similar to a growth rate.
To a what?
The growth rate.
Growth rate. No, it has nothing to do with the growth rate. This is what the fund is worth. And this is where people get a little upset. They look at their statement. They don't really understand their statement. It says you bought so many shares. So let's say the net asset value was $10, and they put in $100. How many shares would they get? 10, right? If they put in $10, they'd get one share. If they put in $15, they'd get 1.5 shares. Don't worry. They keep it to the three digits. They keep everything to the third digit. So then when you go to sell it, you have, you know, whatever, 10 shares. The net asset value might be $9. It might be $12. The net asset value is going to be changing all the time. But your shares are going to stay the same unless you buy more shares, redeem more shares, or you get an automatic reinvestment of distributions or capital gains. Am I going too fast? Yeah? Okay, good, good. Okay. So now, what are the advantages and disadvantages of both? Well, the open-end investment company, there's no market forces. You can always buy more shares or sell your shares. You don't have to worry about brokers. They're very popular, but this is from the management standpoint, not from you as the investor. What happens if you do really, really well in the world? The world showers you with love and affection and money. And so you start to see billions of dollars coming through the door. Now, what do? You already have your 170 share company that you're happy with. Buy more shares of that company. So what some companies do is they will close the fund. They will close the fund to new investors. And as you're running through, maybe if you run through Fidelity, they do this a lot, their mutual funds offerings, you'll see closed to new investors. Or Vanguard, Prime, one of my favorite funds, Prime Cap, closed to new investors. Oh, well. You see why? Because they are all of a sudden overloaded with money to go out and invest, and they don't know what to do with it. Now, other companies take a different approach. They say, okay, fine, bring it in. Nope, we'll deal with it. What they do is they have new managers. They add new managers to the fund. So what you have is basically a mutual fund with several different managers managing their part of the portfolio. And they don't all have to agree. If one person might like Microsoft, the other person says, I'm selling it, fine, sell it to him. Don't go sell it out to the rest of the world. And so that's another way of handling it. So you'll hear some people yell at some companies saying, their funds are too big. No, they're not. They just increase the size of the investment resources, the investment pool of managers and analysts and the like. Now, this on the closed-end side, you must pay the broker's commission. There are market forces. The fund may sell higher than the net asset value. It might sell lower depending on the market forces. But from the manager's standpoint, do they have the same problem as the open-end funds? No, because the money came in the door, that's it. Now they can work on just handling the amount of money that came in the door, because no more money's coming in. It's now out there being bought and sold in the marketplace. So they don't have to worry about that. So what do you think? Does the idea, you're kind of going, oh, I don't know, Payano. Does the idea of a closed-end fund ring your chimes? Most people will never invest in these closed-end funds. They're a very small universe. So the new modern-day go-go way are ETFs. Stan and Andrus gives it a thumbs up. Exchange-traded funds. These are a hybrid. They came out in the early 1990s, and they're growing quickly. They're an open-end fund, which means there's no limit to the number of shares that you can buy and sell. And there's more demand. They create more shares. There's less demand. They destroy shares. But it must be purchased on the exchange like a closed-end fund. So you're no longer going through the mutual fund company. You're going through your brokerage firm. So does it make sense to buy $50 a month of an ETF? If you're going to have to pay $10, $12 to your brokerage firm, which is why, you know, Fidelity is very smart, and Vanguard's not, they jumped in there too. Some of the mutual fund companies, most notably Vanguard and Fidelity, created their own brokerage firms. Now they have the same name, you know, but it's a different company, it's a sister company. But if you buy their ETFs through their brokerage firm, they forgive the commission. Make sense? Yeah? I lose you? Because if you buy an ETF, you're going to have to pay your broker. Your broker says, hey, you know, I did some work for you, pay me. But if you buy their ETFs, no problem. We'll eat that cost. We'll do it for you. We'll because you're buying their ETFs. You're buying their mutual funds. And they have become very popular. We'll discuss for the reasons later on why. But look at the industry. Look at the number of funds starting in 2006. We're up to 2,000 as of 2018. I'm sure there are more now. There are more even now. And look at what happened. You know, up, 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 2008. Even as the industry was growing fast, they dropped, but not that much. And now we're up to 3.4 trillion. It's more than that because that's the end of 2008. And 2019 was a good year. So take note of the drop in value in 2008, even as the growth in the number of ETFs was continuing apace. Cool? Questions, thoughts? I hope I didn't go to that too fast. Plus, remember, the presentations are online. I'm assuming no technical problems here. Plus, there are online presentations on iTunes, YouTube, on the web, on the class website, and 3C Media Solutions with excellent closed captioning. Okay, how are they regulated? The Investment Company Act of 1940, ICA, 1940. That's the Company Act of 1940. And remember that because it's interesting. They named it after a mutual fund that was popular at the time. This was the foundation of the modern mutual fund industry. It defined what is called a regulated investment company as a pass-through investment vehicle. You see, when you make money, whether you're a company or an individual, who comes to call in?
Taxes.
Everyone should say the IRS, the tax man. Wait till I go, a woman. Who comes to call in?
Tax man.
Yeah, okay. So the IRS goes to the mutual fund and says, you made money, pay us. No, you don't understand. This is what was going on in the 1920s and 30s. You don't understand. We're making money for our investors. Go tax them. And the regulators went, So the Congress got together and said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We're going to create this regulated investment company industry. And they will pass through their investment. We take it for granted now, but this was a novel idea at the time. The shareholders pay the taxes. Now, the mutual fund makes its own money based on the fees that they charge their investors, and then they pay taxes on that, but not the money they've made for their investors. To qualify as an investment company, they must hold almost all their assets as stocks, bonds, and other traditional securities. There is a few situations where they're allowed to use derivatives and other risky strategies. But in general, look, we don't want you gambling. We want you investing. That's what the Congress said. And they must use no more than 5% of their assets when acquiring a particular security. Now, what does that mean? 5% divided into 100 is percent. 5 divided into 100. The 100 divided by 5. That'll work too. No, you did it the other way around. You did 5. No. Do 100, divide symbol 5. It's 20. And now, yeah, right. You can do it in your head. Okay. In other words, they must have at least 20 stocks. They must have at least 20 bonds. Are you with me? Because they got to invest the money, and they can put no more than 5% into any one investment. But as we said, they usually have 100 or 200 or more. However, say they bought Amazon 20 years and never sold it, and Amazon and Netflix and all these other companies which have skyrocketed, it might go above 5%. Their value of that stock might go above 5% of the total portfolio. They're not required to sell. They don't have to sell. They can hold on to it, but they can no longer add to that position. So there was a guy, he's long retired, Donald Draymond, and he had his own fund, and he loved Marlboro. Philip Morris was the name, now it's called Altria. He loved that stock, and it went up to 12% of his mutual fund, which is usually, wait a minute, and he said, I don't care, it's the greatest stock ever, and it was until things started. It's still a very good stock, but it's different now. But this was in the 1970s, 80s, when Philip Morris just... People can say, it can't go up any higher. Oh, yeah? Who's going to stop it? And it just exploded over the long term. And then they create an organization with checks and... Have you heard of checks and balances? Have you taken civics? We don't have... I don't know if we still have teach... Do we teach civics anymore? I think we teach in civics or uncivics or... Because this is what we have here. And I would have, this is from your book, and I would have turned it upside down because the shareholders make the base. They're the base, I think, but they do it the other way around. The shareholders elect a board of directors, and the board of directors is supposed to be looking out for the shareholders' interest. Some of the boards of directors have been accused of being just rubber stamp organizations. But 75% of the people must be independent of the mutual fund company. And so how do you get to be one of these jobs? You got to be an ambassador or a muckety-muck, and you get treated really, really well. Then the mutual fund, I don't know why they did this. It should be around there. The mutual fund is actually made up of various components. The most important is the investment company, the investment advisor, the management company. These are the people who make the decisions. These are the people with the top hats who go knocking on the doors of Ford and GM and Honda and decide whether or not they're going to invest in them. They're paid very well. But do they hold on to the shares? No. The custodian holds on to the shares. It's a separate company. You with me? Understand? They don't want these people running away with the money. These are usually trust companies and banks whose job it is to hold on to people's money, in this case, shares. And then there's a distributor which is responsible for getting the shares out to the public. They're often called wholesalers as opposed to retail brokers who deal with the investors. The wholesaler sells to the brokerage firm and promotes their funds. The transfer agent is responsible for the buying and selling of shares from the public. Their job is to, you know, accept the money and then issue the shares through the distributor, and you know, the custodian gets the money, and then they buy and sell the shares. And then there's an independent public accounting firm. You might have heard of Ernst and Young. Now it's called Ernst, right? Ernst. Price Waterhouse Coopers. No, I think it's called Weiss Price Waterhouse. And then KPMG. Have you heard of KPM? Any accounting majors in here? Yeah, you've heard of these companies? No? Okay, well, who knows? You might work for them one of these days. Their job is to go in there and say, okay, you say you have 100,000 shares of Hewlett-Packard. Where are they? Go over to the... Oh, yeah, they got them. Are you with me? You see what's going on here? Why the big... Okay, and then the next two slides just go through what we just discussed on the graph. Why the large diversification of tasks and companies? Well, mutual funds are highly regulated in order to protect the shareholders' investment from fraud and collapse. How often have you heard of a scandal at a mutual fund company? Well, until 2003, wait a minute! You want me to invest in an industry that's plagued with scandal? Did you just say mutual fund scandals? Well, yeah, okay. Since 1940, the mutual fund industry has been regulated and escaped any hint of impropriety. You like that word, impropriety? Means hanky-panky. There was one guy, he had a very, very small mutual fund. He was a friend of President Richard Nixon, I think, in 1970. He ran off with $4 million, went to Cuba. But other than that, it just never happened. The mutual fund company was squeaky clean. In 2003, some practices that were not quite illegal, but obviously unethical, were uncovered. And only a handful of funds and people were affected. What were they doing? Well, they weren't illegal, but they were definitely unethical, and you knew you shouldn't have been doing it. And the worst guy was this guy, Mr. Strong, who started Strong Funds, which are now gone. They got bought by somebody else. He was worth, at the time, $600 million. And what were they doing? They were stealing fractions of pennies for their fellow investors. How did they do it? Well, it's a little hard to describe, but think about it. Think about it. I said that at 4 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, 1 o'clock our time, when the markets close in New York, they have to go around the world and find out what these securities are valued at and come up with a net asset value. Well, if the markets tanked in New York, in the United States, there's a pretty good chance that a couple hours later after they close, when Japan opens up, the markets are going to go down in Japan. You're not sure, but it's been more and more correlated. The whole world is more and more correlated. So what do? You sell your Japanese fund that is priced for yesterday's securities, right? And then the next day, buy it back. You see what they did? Yeah, you see what they did? What? Yeah, it's arbitrage, some people call it. Hanky-panky. Because mutual funds are not meant to be trading vehicles. That's what ETFs have become. But mutual funds, open-end and closed-end, were meant to be long-term investments. So what happened? The organic matter hit the ventilating device. Only a few funds were involved. Most funds had nothing to do with it. If you did that, some of them would hit you with a 2% fee. They'll just say, okay, you can do that, but we're going to hit you with a 2% fee. Others just said, no, you can't do that. Don't do it. If you do it, we won't let you buy it back for at least 30 days. And if you do it enough times, we're going to kick you out. We don't want you. We don't want you as an investor. So a lot of funds had, most funds had nothing to do with this. But this guy destroyed himself. He was very contrite, barred from the industry for life, and said, I ruined my reputation. I let everybody down around me. And for what? He made about $80,000 doing this. Now, to you and me, that's a lot of money, right? He was worth $600 million at the time. What happens to these people? They become so powerful, they think they're above everybody else. They think they're better than everybody else and they're invincible. And some of them are, especially if you have the Senate helping them. Yes, you had a question, Mr. Andres?
Can someone like myself do that?
Not anymore, no. Not with open-end or closed-end funds, but you can do it all day long with ETFs.
Not ETF, but with shares, stock.
No, with stock.
Yeah.
That's a whole different world. We're talking mutual funds now. Sure, you can do that with stock, buy and sell, but your broker will love you. Because what are you doing? You're giving them commissions. Yeah, they'll love you. Okay, excellent. All right, so now, we're ready. Any questions, any thoughts? So do you trust the mutual fund industry?
Yep.
Yeah, I do too, yes.
A
what?
Do you want a fact for mutual funds?
Fact for mutual funds. Let's hear it.
All right. So the last mutual fund that went bankrupt was in 1998.
Oh, yeah. No. Mutual funds are good, folks. Mutual funds, they're not perfect. Nothing is. But they're good people. Now, right now, we're going to take a little diversion because we got to start talking about fees, which... And I'm going to change something. I'm going to change things up. Change is good. Not always. Sometimes change is good. Sometimes. Some people change. Some people mutate. But I wait until the end to show you the good news. And I'm kind of thinking, some of you are just kind of going, okay, we're going to take a look at what are called illustrations. We'll go back to it again because it's very important. We're going to take a look at what it can do for you. And especially because most all of you are very young. And so what we have on the website are what are called illustrations. $100 a month for 30 years, $100 a month for 40 years, and then $100 a month for 40 years increasing. So this is for the young folks, 20s, 30s. You have 30, 40 years of ahead of you of working. Probably longer because of health care advances. Supposedly the first person to live 150 years has already been born. Your generation, most of you, should be living to at least 100 or more. So we'll see. You guys are going, who went? My mother-in-law was in the nursing home. She had a series of many strokes. And my sister and my sister-in-law were always like, I don't want to live like that. Hey, just put a pillow over my head. Kill me. I don't want to. And I say, when you get there, it's a little different. It's not so bad. You got TV. You got people around.
Would you be discussing also the tax implications?
We'll discuss taxes, but not in detail.
Okay.
Yeah. If you buy a Roth IRA. Buy a Roth. Okay, so here is a sample mutual fund that we'll take a look at in detail next week, because that's what we do at the end of the semester. And here, it's called an illustration. And they have to be approved by the Securities Exchange Commission and FINRA, the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, and they must have things like this. Investments are not FDIC insured, nor are they deposits of or guaranteed by a bank or any other entity, so they may lose value. You all read that, didn't you? Figures shown are past results and not predictive of results in future periods. Current and future results may be lower or higher than those shown. Share prices and returns will vary. Does anybody read this? It's like Gregorian chant or Greek or whatever. It's nobody reads it. But the lawyers say it's got to be there. Because what you have to understand is that you'll experience it. These things can go down. They are not guaranteed by a bank. So we go back to 1990. We start putting $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year. Sounds like a lot of money, but some of you are paying at least that much for your cell phones, right? Nod your heads yes. Okay. So do you think those people at AT&T and Verizon, do you think they've taken this class? Nod your heads yes. Yeah, they've taken and a lot more. How to market to you. And so what we see... The 1990s, the market went in two directions, up and way up. And so by 2000, you had 32,000. And then we had 3 years in a row down. they actually, this guy actually went up in 2000, but the market went down to 2000. And then, so 32,000 down to 28,000. Is it going to happen to you? Everybody nod your head. Nod your head, yes. It's going to happen to you. But then we came back, and by the end of 2007, we had 59,000. Are you with me? Are you feeling good? Bang. 2008 comes by. Bolt of lightning out of the sky. Market drops 23% in 1 week. But you didn't run, you didn't hide, you kept putting your $100 a month away until the end of 2019. You've put $36,000 in, which is about what some people pay for a car, right? Which will be worth $4,000 in 10 years, $5,000. And you got $172,000 at 9.05%. Is that cool? But is it enough?
Nope.
No. Let's take a look at the graph. This is what we start to see. We start to see that exponential. But look, boom, it's bumpy. It's volatile. Let us now extend our time horizon by simply 10 years. So into your 60s, some of you, or maybe into your early 70s. And again, be afraid, be very afraid. You're going to lose money, and we're not going to let you cry in your in our beer. Okay, so 1980, we put in $100 starting in 1980. And we see the market go in two directions, up and way up, until 2000, when we have 170,000. Yeah, 170,000. And next year, 2 years, one, oops, too many, 140,000. So you lost 30,000. Yeah? Now, let's take a look at 2007. 265, 174.
Ooh,
whoa. Ooh, 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 is it too late to get in? Ooh, is it too late to get out? And this is how you're going to feel. And everyone I talk to, myself included, it feels like somebody punched you in the stomach. You have that sinking feeling, like, oh, what should I do? That's the time to buy more. But that's the cool thing about putting $100 a month away. What do you care? You're just putting $100 a month away. And so at the end of 40 years, you've put in $48,000, which is barely enough to buy a good Tesla, and you have $676. Cool? Is that good? Yeah? Now, we see the graph. We see the exponential curve starting to go wee up in the air. This is the best part. Because now, what I'm going to try to get you to do is put $100 a month away, but then every year increase it by $10. Two fewer trips to $5. $4.
$5?
$6.
$6.
Where? Starbucks, right. Two fewer trips to Starbucks every month. So next year, 110. Next year, 120. Can you do that? Nod your head yes. Oh, good. Be afraid, be very afraid. So we're going to see that the $100 a month is increasing. So the first year, 1,200, 1,310, 1,430. So we're increasing our investment. No big deal. Hang on a minute.
No, I'm just stretching.
Okay, stretching. And we see that the market went in two directions, up and way up, until 2000. And in 2000, we had 257. And then 2 years later, 216. And then in 2007, 420. And then the next year, 278. And I'll never forget my voice. How are we doing, Frank? Oh, just fine, dear. That was me. Are we okay? Yes, dear, we're doing just fine. But look at what happened. When you did not give up, did not panic, did not sell at the bottom, you put in $141,000 because your investment is rising. It sounds like a lot of money. It ain't. It's a lot less than you're going to spend on cars over your working career. Who knows what's going to happen? Maybe in 5 years you won't want a car. You'll just, I'll come to you. But what?
Can it help
her? I hope so. I'm hoping so, because I tell you, people, they scare me to death. The drivers, trying to text, watching porn, putting on their makeup. And you put in $141,000. And you have 1.1 million. Cool? Yeah? You don't blow it all in one place. You'll buy a nice house, yeah. Hopefully you have a house to live in. But yeah, hopefully this is your retirement account. Yes, sir, Andres, yes.
Looks like you can live on your dividends alone.
Yeah, it depends. Depends on where you live. Depends on your lifestyle. But you're going to be building other assets also, right? You're going to be building other assets, a home, some type of social security and the like. So, yeah. We'll see. Yo quiero vivir en Zihuatanejo. Ay. Okay, now. All right, now, any folks in their 40s or 50s in here? I don't think so. Any Gen Xers, baby boomers? No. What? No, don't ask. We don't ask people ages. So what happens is invariably you get somebody who comes up in their later 40s or 50s. They go, why didn't you tell me this 25 years ago? Sorry. So they have to put a lot more in, but they don't have as much time. You understand? Mm-hmm. When you're young, time is your asset. Time is on your side. When you get older, time becomes your enemy. So for somebody who's in their late 40s, early 50s, they might have 20 years. And even if they put $500 a month, which is, you know, for some people a car payment, they're going to wind up paying $120,000, investing $120,000 and have $300,000. You know? Don't get me wrong. I mean, half a sandwich is better than no sandwich. But we'd like you to be millionaires. That's why you're here, right? And so what happens if you put $1,000 a month, which again, some people pay for cars, put the insurance and all that stuff in there, you put in $240,000, $600,000. You see why we want you to get started early? Now, don't do it tomorrow. Okay, you don't have to, I got to start right away. No. By age 25 or so, once your life is starting to even out, because the early 20s are pretty crazy, as I remember. Was I ever 20 years? I don't think I was ever 20 years old. I think I was born this way. Cool? Questions, thoughts, ideas? Now, if you're interested in any other type of illustration, we'll come back to this at the end of chapter 4. Just ask me and I can put them together. I can do it. You have an idea. All right, so let's now stretch. Wake up, everybody. Wake up. Because we're ready to get started on fees. Boring, but important. Very important that you understand fees, if only because you're going to be the investment guru for your friends and family. And you can't let them down. You understand? But it's going to make me look bad. We can't have that, can we? You're going to look like a genius. Okay, there are three major fees for all mutual funds. These are the annual operating expenses. And every mutual fund has them. How the world changes. There is the management fee. This is the fee that is paid to the portfolio managers, the analysts. They're the ones who make the investment decisions. And again, if they're doing it right, this is a substantial sum. Because some companies have organizations based all around the world, speak dozens of languages, in going to 60, 70 different countries around the world. It's an expensive proposition to do it well. The next category is the 12B1 fee. What a stupid name. Well, it has to do with the provision in the Investment Company Act of 1940 that says you mutual funds, you have to tell people how much you're paying for servicing, advertising, distributing the fund. Does Coca-Cola have to tell you how much they're paying for advertising?
Nope.
They have a little disclaimer at the bottom. No. Or the car companies, those Super Bowl ads. No, but the mutual fund companies do. Your banks don't have to. Your insurance companies don't have to. They're not under the provisions of the Investment Company Act of 1940. So we're going to see how these 12B1 fees have been kicked around and used for different reasons. And then the last one is usually the smallest. And that's the accounting and other fees. And that's the pay for the lights and the rent. And
What about the expense ratio?
That we're going to get to that, because that's how it's shown. That's how it's published as an expense ratio. We're going to hang on a minute. It's a great question. Now, you see there's a little line here, and you see this trustee fee. The trustee fee is only for IRAs and other what are called tax-qualified accounts. That's what the IRS calls them. These are accounts that if you do what you're supposed to do and the custodian does what they're supposed to do, Domini, Domini, Sanctus, Sanctus, the IRS blesses and kisses it, and you don't have to pay any taxes until you take the money out. Or in the case of the Roth, named after Mr. William Roth, you don't pay any taxes. Woo-hoo-hoo. And in your 121 class, they should spend a lot of time on this, and we'll spend a little bit of time at the end of the semester going through different types of accounts, but it's online if you want to take a look at it now, if you're really excited about looking at it now. And this is typically 10 bucks a year. Many companies now don't even tell you. They just take it out of your account. Whereas other companies say, look, if you send us a check for 10 bucks, we won't take it out of your account. And you get to deduct it off your taxes, which is $10. Whoopee. But still, some companies are a little old that way. These, as Nate said, are published as a percent of the mutual fund's assets, which we'll take a look in a minute. But now, what about trading costs? Trading costs are not included in the annual operating expenses. So how do you know how much your mutual fund is paying in trading costs? Well, you can ask them. It's in there somewhere, in their counting somewhere. Or simply look at the turnover, which is more important than just knowing how much trading costs are. In my humble opinion, your stock mutual fund, your bond mutual fund, should have a lower rather than a higher turnover. Everyone's different, but what does it mean? Well, if you see 100% turnover, I'm going to ask you to look for it. You can find it. It's there. It's in the annual report. It's on the website and on various places. If your mutual fund has 100% turnover, what that means is within 1 year, they will have bought and sold all the securities in the fund. They've turned over everything. If it has a 50% turnover, it'll be 2 years. Does that make sense? Because in a year, they've turned over half of it, and in 2 years, they will turn over the other half. Now, that doesn't mean all the investments. Some of them they can keep, but they're talking about, in general, what's going on. You'll see turnover rates of 200%, and those are funds that are holding their investments for 6 months. In my humble opinion, that's not investing. That's speculating. That's renting. It's not owning stocks. So you with me? I like to see, and again, you decide, everyone's different, but I like to see 25, 30%. Why? Because that means they're holding it for about 3 to 4 to 5 years, 20 to 30%. And we'll learn why that's a magic number later on. Yes, Nate?
I was going to ask, but you already answered my question.
Yeah.
About the lower percentage.
The lower percentage means, in my humble opinion, again, you're going to see other people who say, no, I want them hard charging. I want them buying and selling. I want to see eye-popping returns. You're going to see, growth funds with 188%. To me, that's not investing.
Practicality was long term. We're looking at like something between 20 to 12%.
That's what I like to see. I like to see 20 to 30% on an actively managed fund. We're going to talk about passively managed in a little bit. But caveat. What if it's a money market mutual fund? When do your investments mature? 30, 60, 90 days, 200 days. You're going to have a huge turnover because you can't hold them for more than a year, right? So there's a caveat for that. If you see, 300%, that's ridiculous. It's a money market account. Oh, okay. Yes, Andre?
Can you see what they invest in with your money?
Oh, yeah, sure. Just go on the website, pick portfolio or holdings. It'll say holdings. That's what you're going to do. I'm going to ask you to do it. Cool? We cool with that? Okay. Now, here comes the eternal question. Should you buy a load or should you buy a no-load fund? And the load, the sales charge, the sales commission, was originally there to pay the broker, to pay your financial advisor. Right? That's how they got paid. And now the broker's fees, the commissions, have gotten a bit of a bad name. You don't want to pay broker's fees. So then we have more subtle and modern ways to soak, I mean, to charge our clients. Other mutual funds said, look, we're going to bypass the middleman. We're going to go directly to the consumer through 800 numbers, you know, 30, 40 years ago, now through the websites, and we're not going to charge a commission. Do you think the brokers were happy about that?
No.
Hell no. Do you think the brokers were happy about that?
No.
You're supposed to answer me. It makes it go better if you do, because I think, I know you're awake. You know. I was a math major in undergrad. We perfected the art of sleeping with our eyes open. Get that smile on your face. And so some of you, I don't know. You don't answer me. I think they're math majors. Okay. All right. So what did the brokers do? Hang on a minute. We're going to see what they did. Because what happened is the load funds morphed into various different share classes, they called them. And the first class was Class A. Some companies call them Class 1. This is a front-end load. This was traditionally the only way you bought mutual funds until about the 60s and 70s when the no-loads came out. You normally have lower annual operating expenses. They then came out with the Class B shares, some people call them Class 2, back-end load, which is pretty easy to remember, Class B back-end. You pay the commission when you redeem the shares. And so the investors said, well, that's, what difference does it make? Relax. Sit down. Let's discuss these. The Class B shares have a contingent deferred sales charge, CDSC. And I'm going to ask you to remember that. Why? Because it feels so good when you say it. Say contingent.
Contingent.
Everybody. People that teach these, contingent. Doesn't it feel good to hear? Contingent. Kind of like lumpia. Say lumpia. Doesn't and lumpia tastes good too. So, but contingent doesn't taste good. And so what happens? Yes, the first year we're going to charge you 5% or 4%. Second year, 3, 2, 1, until after 4, 5, 6 years, no more sales charge. That's why it's called contingent deferred sales charge. And you're going to hold on to the mutual fund for a long time. Aren't you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? Oh, yes, Mr. Mr. Broker. We're long-term investors. Hopefully. And so you're never going to pay a sales charge. Oh, but they have higher annual operating expenses. They're not stupid, right? We're going to charge people. So instead of charging people a commission, we charge them higher expenses. Until, you know, 7, 8 years, 6, 7 years, and then they reverted to the A shares and became cheaper. A third class came about called Class C, and these used to be called the broker no-load funds. The Securities and Exchange Commission said, no, 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 you can't do that anymore. You cannot call them no-load funds because they had no front-end, no back-end charges. Well, they hit you with about 1% if you took the money out within a year, which you shouldn't do. I mean, once you choose a mutual fund, stick with it for at least a year. However, many Class C shares have higher annual operating expenses in perpetuity. Like that word? It lets you spit on your friends. Perpetuity. Again, through the ubiquitous 12b1 fees. Hence, they can cost more than the A or the B shares over time. And as I said, the New Securities and Exchange Commission said, no. You cannot call them broker no-load funds if the 12b1 fee is greater than 0.25%. Everybody understands that, right? They don't even know what 12b1 fee is. So you may, you probably won't. This was about 8, 9 years ago when they did this. And so some brokers still call them no-load funds, but they're not supposed to. The next category are the no-load funds. And the no-load funds come in various shapes, but mostly two different types. The Class F shares, sometimes called FI, sometimes I, sometimes advisor class. And these are for the financial advisor to charge for his or her services. You get no upfront fee, no back-end fee, low annual operating expenses, but then the advisor taxed on a 1 or 2% charge annually to manage the funds. We're not your brokers. No. We're your wealth managers. I don't like it. I'm a manager. I'm a broker. I'm a financial representative. I can do this. I don't. I'm old. I make my living teaching. Thank you very much. I don't have to worry about making my Porsche or BMW payment. So I tell people, look, you want my services, you want me as a broker, as a financial advisor, whatever you want to call us, pay the upfront fee and be done with it. Why? Because you're going to pay less over the long term. Assuming you're in it for the long term. If you're not in it for the long term, personally, I don't want you as an investor because I can't help you. I'm not even going to try. I'm in it for the long term. But other advisors disagree with me vehemently, to the point where some people were ready to punch me out. And then the last class are the true. Now, that's not a legal term. That's what the financial media calls them. True no-load funds. The mutual fund company deals directly with the public. They cannot have a 12B1 fee greater than 0.25%. What does that mean? Hang on a minute. These are the darlings of the popular media. Who needs a financial advisor? Just buy my book and watch me on my television show and buy my whatever. But that doesn't mean the overall fees are low. Over time, a no-load fund could wind up costing you more than a load fund based on the annual operating expenses. So are you confused yet? Hang on a minute. Are you confused yet? Good. We've done our job. We've confused you. Because that's our job, our industry. We don't want people to really understand how we're so good. I mean, I'm charging them for the financial services. Yes?
Can you give an example for true no-load?
Oh, I love it when people ask questions. Hang on a minute. We got a few slides to get to. We're going to see true no-load funds also. So here is a mutual fund. This is a real mutual fund, and it has a really stupid name, AB Large Cap Growth Fund. Isn't that great? AB, not AB, AB. Well, it started out as Alliance, and then they merged with Bernstein, Samuel Bernstein, and so they called them Alliance Bernstein, and they just shortened it to AB. Isn't that the kind of fund you want to buy? It's actually a very good company, Alliance. They're one of the companies that were involved in the hanky-panky. Two people at the company were doing it, and Alliance almost disappeared because of it, because of such bad publicity. But they have some very good funds, and this is one of them. It's called the Alliance, AB Large Cap Growth Fund. And they are involved in buying big companies, that's what large cap stands for, that are growing. Right? Sound like a winning strategy? They have Class A shares. The Class B shares are no longer issued. They have closed them. The Class C shares, and then what they call the advisor class. It used to be called the F class. Now they don't think people think, oh, it's flunking. So now they call them the advisor class. So what do they charge you up front? You pay $100. What do they charge you? Everyone say 4.25%. Wait till I ask you. What do they charge you? That's $4.25 if you put in $100. Are you with me? Mm-hmm. If you put in $1,000, $42.50. You put in $10,000, $425. You put in $100,000. No, doesn't work that way. Once you get over $25,000, $50,000, $100,000, they have sales charge breakpoints. They want people to put more money in. Or your account gets over there. And we'll see those. We should get to those today. Maybe not. But we'll get to those. So that's why it says maximum sales charge. Because depending on how much money you invest, it might be less. If you have $1 million, no sales charge. Is that cool? The industry loves millionaires, don't they? They love very, very wealthy people. In fact, I hear brokers say, well, I don't take anybody for less than $500,000. And I think, they don't need your help. They got $500,000. They don't need your help. Right? I want somebody to put $50 a month away, you know, never put a dime away. And they look at you like, you're weird. I say, yeah, I am. Okay, whatever. Because you don't make a whole lot of money that way as a broker. But those are the people who need the help, right? Yeah. Now, notice the annual operating expenses. For the management fees, they're across the board the same. The managers are getting paid what the managers are getting paid. 0.51%. What does that mean? If you have $100 in the account, every year, 51 cents goes to the management of the fund. If you have $1,000, that's $5.10. Are you with me? You see what's going on here? Does it sound like a lot of money? Not really. Not really. It's not really. If they're doing a good job, and these are people who are doing a pretty good job. There's the 12B1 fees, the amount that is set aside for distribution, advertising, servicing the fund, and then the other expenses, you know, accounting, website, rent, utilities. So every $100 every year in perpetuity, you're going to pay 89 cents for every $100 you have in the account. Cool? How much do you think your bank charges you? How much do you think the life insurance charges you? If you, they tell you? They don't want to. They don't even know. The people in the branch, we don't know. You have to go up the chain of command. Plus, they're not under the Investment Company Act of 1940. So they don't have to. All right, so you go to your broker. You know, I don't want to pay that upfront fee. And what does she say? No problem. There's always no problem. Sit down, Bobby. Have a cup of coffee. For you, well, we don't have the back-end shares. And remember, we used to. We used to have the Class B shares. No upfront fee. Well, if you take the money out the first year, it's going to be 4%. But you're not going to do that, are you, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? You're going to hold your money for the long term because it goes from 4, 3, 2, 1, and after 4 years, the fifth year, you pay no back-end fee. And you say, okay, yes, you're right, Ms. Broker. I'm not going to take the money out. 51 cents for every $100 for the management fee. What happened? What happened to the 12B1 fee? Bing! It went from 25 cents to a dollar. So now we're paying $1.68, about twice. And we pay that for, I think with Alliance, 6 years. And then, boom, they become A shares. So you see what's going on here? They're going to get you one way or the other. And if you're paying an extra 75 cents a year for 6 years, that's about 4.25%, isn't it? But it could be more because if your investment goes up, you're actually paying that on a higher amount. Are you with me? You see what's going on? You think the B shares were very popular? No, they weren't. And some brokers were abusing them, so they no longer offer them. Some companies still do, but this company no longer offers them. So you go to your broker. I don't want to pay up front fee. I don't pay a back end fee. I want to leave a year or so. Your broker, what do they have to say to you?
No problem.
No problem. Stick with us, folks. For you, we have the Class C shares. No upfront fee. Well, we're going to charge you 1% if you take the money out within 1 year, but you're not going to do that, right, Mr. and Mrs. John Q. Investor? You're in it for the long term? Oh, yes, Ms. Broker. Boom, 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 $1.64. So they're going to get you. And the C shares last a lot longer. I forget what Alliance is. But the next company, lasts for 10 years until you get the lower annual operating expenses. Are you with me? You see what you're up against? And I'm going to hold you to these. I want you to know, understand these. I'm serious. They're on the study guide. I want you to study. Ooh, terrible word. Student study. Now, you go to your broker. I don't want to pay upfront fees. I don't want to pay back-end fees. I don't want to pay higher annual operating expenses. And what did your broker say?
No problem.
No problem. For you, we have the advisor class. Used to be Class F. Now, often, they won't even show you these other share classes. Oh, no, because we're your wealth managers. You get no upfront fee, no back-end fee, and look, lower than the Class A share, 64 cents.
You have to charge an extra $2.
Sign here, please.
Yeah, another 2%. What was that, Ms. Broker? What did you say? We charge you an extra 1% or maybe even 2% every year on top of that for as long as you are with us. That's our wealth management fee. And, you know, I was at a meeting. I was at a meeting.
Had my suit on.
And it's a seminar with lots of other mostly old white guys. And that's why it's going to change. You're going to be the younger folks who come in the industry and shake it up. And I was saying, I don't really think it's in the best interest of the clients to be pushing these advisor class shares. Because if they're long-term investors, they're going to wind up spending a whole lot more money in fees. And I'll never forget. I didn't have a good comeback. I just shut my mouth. What are you talking about? You send them a bottle of wine on their birthday, take them to the golf course, take them to the steakhouse. They'll love you. Do you see how he didn't really answer? He didn't say, you're right. It's implicit. We are screwing them. They'll love you. Can you treat them right? And this is why you want to be a broker when you grow up. Because once you have your clients, it's a cake job. You just have to schmooze the clients, make them happy, make them feel good. And the most important thing you're going to do is when the market falls, talk them off the cliff. Don't pull the trigger. Don't sell your shares. Are you with me? Understand? Okay, good. Now, we're going to run out of time here, so let me run to the no-load funds. And we'll come back to this on Thursday. But you see why you have to study? If you just look at this once, are you going to remember all this?
No.
Hell no. Right. So now let's go to the no-load fund. Let's go to the true no-load fund. This is an index fund. Have you heard of Vanguard? You can't help but hear of Vanguard. They advertise like crazy. This is their flagship 500 index. And what does it do? Well, we're going to discuss this S&P 500 index in detail in Chapter 5, so don't get upset. But it's the 500 largest, actually a little bit more than 500, but it's the 500 largest companies in the United States, traditionally. And all they do is look on that list, and if that fund is on the list, I mean, if that stock is on the list, they buy it. And if the stock is not on the list, they don't buy it. You or I could run that fund, because we'd have to do no research. Are you with me? Now, what can they do because of that? Do they have an upfront fee? Do they have a back-end fee? Look at the management fees. They charge you $20 if your account is less than $10,000, unless you sign up for electronic delivery. And their other expenses are 2.02%. So they're charging you 14 cents for every $100 in the account. So you see the difference? They are going on lower annual operating expenses. That's their main selling point. And it's been a very successful one. And there's another selling point that we'll talk about later on. But so what are you going to do next 2 days? Study, right. You're going to review your notes, go back over, take a look at the at least this guy right here. Look at the A shares, B shares, C shares, and then the FFI advisor class. Study the first section where we talked about closed-end versus open-end versus ETF, and be awesome. All right, so we'll see you on Thursday. Assignments due. Who snuck in late?
I wasn't here on Monday.
Next Thursday? Last
no,
Thursday?
I wasn't here this Monday. This Tuesday. No, last Thursday, yeah.
Okay, remember, go on the website, and you'll see the recorded presentations. Because we record the presentations here and put them up on the website. The assignments for Chapter 1. You have the Chapter 1 book? You have the Chapter 1 packet? Mm-hmm. Look at the assignments. What's the website?
WonderProfessor.com.
Yeah. You can listen to the commentaries, look at the assignments, and it'll help you with that.
Okay.
Contact me. You can also send me an email. Okay, turn this on.